Welcome on a bumpy choo-choo train.
Favorite grooves. You just can't help but move to that kind of music. That's Mop Mop with Locomotive. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Friday, March the 14th, and you know what that means. Free your mind. That's right. 888-874-4888. We'll be moving briskly along today with your considered opinions of the issues and events you think warrant closer inspection. From Berkeley, we start off with Harvey. How are you doing?
Hi, Eutrice. Well, how are you today?
Good, thanks.
Very good. Well, I'd like to talk about something that I think is very, very pertinent to today's situation. It's about overpopulation. But from another angle. Well, it seems that overpopulation is the ruination of the earth. It's a depletion of all the resources and migration of people, etc. You know, we just see it in the worst way, and so do I. It has so much negative connotations to it. But there's an interesting side correlation to the world population, and I did some research. I opened up a website, and I looked up the word, I Googled the word world population growth. And according to this website, they've correlated the years to the amount of people on the planet at that time. And in the year number one, there were 200 million people on the planet, according to this website, and it grows. Like in the year 1000, there were 275 million. So I correlated it to very famous inventions. And it turns out that the Whitney's James Watt, the engine, was in 1769. There were 700 million people on the planet at that time. Whitney's cotton gin, 1794, there were 1 billion people on the planet. The telephone, Alexander Graham Bell, in 1876, there was 1.5 billion. Model T Ford and the William and Orville Wright flight was about 1.7 billion. And then TV was 1927, it was about 2 billion. The transistor in 1947 was 2.5 million. Integrated circuit, 1959 was 3 billion people on the planet. The cell phones in 1973, 4 billion. And the first Martian rover was 1997. There were 6 billion people on the planet. And today, today we're all connected right across the planet. In fact, I'm looking at a website that says mobile internet devices will outnumber humans in 2013. So we are all, you know, passing judgment, good or bad. But it just seems we are all entangled in 2013 through our technology. And also, I believe if the population hits about 8 billion, then we'll have anti-gravity. It's almost like the planet is like a baby, then an adolescent, then we have the brain power of a young adult, and then a mature adult. And we're coming up to a new level where this may bring us a chance to populate other planets, to go, to be free, to roam space, and it's our destiny to be birthed to the stars. So I think that, again, I don't know if it's good or bad. I'm not passing any judgment, but this seems to be what's happening, and that's why birth control, or that's why the populations grow contrary to every rational reason to slow it and stop it. Maybe right. There's a destiny here that's beyond our perception, and this is just one view that I have, and I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but there it is.
There's no right or wrong. It's just your opinion.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thanks. Dallas, we hear you, Sister Sarah.
Oh, greetings to you, Utrecht.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Greetings to the PRN audience. I'm glad to hear the report that y'all are expanding. I'm trying to do my best by sending out information via emails to associates to tell them to tune in to PRN to get some informative news.
Thank you. That's a good service. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Utrecht. If I could tag really quickly on what Harvey just mentioned with this population overload. What I hear people saying, these population overload, and usually when people are saying that, they're talking about people of color, the African continent and in Asia, where they're always having a problem, that people have large families and they're always trying to come in here with birth control or whatever else to try and tell people what it is that they need to do about their family. And I find it very offensive because no one is going into Europe and telling Europeans what it is that they need to do in order to control their birth rate. But they're always in somebody else's bedroom trying to tell them, especially on the African continent, what it is that you need to do with population control. This planet has been in existence for billions of years, and the only people who are worried about it is the greedy, selfish people who don't believe in sharing. They want to keep everything for just a few while the many needs to starve. To get back to the topic that I really call about you, Trees, is the situation with flying around with all these idiotic rumors about this plane maybe getting sucked up into a vortex or, you know, space aliens or whatever, just take it off the planet. If people, I'm just going to indulge it because I really don't get into this kind of TMZ type mess. But you treat there's a logical reason where this plane disappeared. There's one or two things. It's either this plane was hit out of the sky by a missile because U.S. and NATO, they're always doing their little war games out in that area. They could have hit the plane out by mistake. Now, all of a sudden, they're going to jump up in there and say, oh, we're going to be the lead investigator in here to try and see what happened to it when they know very well and good what they did. The plane could have been diverted and sitting on one of these remote islands somewhere out in the South Asian area out there. That's where this plane could be, because everything that I'm reading about who was flying on this plane and the mission, because this plane was on its way to China. China have a dispute going on with Japan over some islands. We're seeing what's going on with Russia and the Ukraine, where these two nations who were in league with helping Iran, all of a sudden you're seeing Russia is about where the Crimea is about to split off. All of that unrest that started up there in Russia with the U.S. leading the pack on that. Now all of a sudden this is getting close to China, where this plane has disappeared because of the majority of the people on that plane were Chinese engineers heading back into China. So I see this as these people trying to play checkmate on China and Russia because they're trying to encircle them while finding a way to get into Iran. This is what this is all about. While they're trying to overreach and get the global control under their control, they are trying to get into Iran because Iran is the last man standing that they need to get into while it consolidates, because Shell Oil is already up in there. The Ukraine got a contract to start exploration out in there for oil and gas.
Your theory is that it was shot out of the sky.
It could have been hit out of the sky by one of their laser-guided missiles out there doing whatever navigation, or the plane could have been diverted and it's sitting on some remote location, because all of a sudden now they're trying to say two people's passport got stolen 2 years ago. They're their passport is used and they're on this plane. They're trying to put out terrorism, because this is all...
No, actually, they've rescinded that. They said that it was just one of those things, that there's a stolen passport mill, and it happens that these two men... who were using fraudulent passports. They were part of the industry of supplying stolen passports to people who need them to travel. And it's widespread in the region. But okay, let's see how your theory holds up. You know, I'm just following the reports, seeing where these things are going. It's all over the place. But thanks so much. That's an interesting.
You're welcome, Dimitri.
That's an interesting scenario. Thank you. New Jersey, Michael, how are you?
Hi, am I on the line?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay, good. We're cutting on and off a little bit. I hope we have a good connection. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, Eutrice.
Same here.
I'm glad that we have a progressive outlet or whatever we want to call it to get to free our minds. And I would like to free my mind.
Okay.
So I have to ask, you know, looking at everything in the world, the whole setup, the whole business, I have to ask, you know, scientists and, you know, social scientists and people generally believe that the commonality, the common factor of human beings is that we can reason, that we have reason. That's what separates us maybe from the animals, they say. And so we are all rational. But I take issue with that. I think the common factor of human beings is irrationality. And I think people are irrational. I can't understand, I can't see how we could arrive at this point, this crisis, which is crisis after crisis after crisis, but now we're getting to the end of it. I don't see how this, we could arrive at this point and be rational human beings. Let me give an example. If I have a little child and I send him to kindergarten for the first time, he goes to school, I have to be in the school and I happen to, you know, walk by my kid's class and I see that one kid, you know, they're having a leisure time and they all have blocks. And one kid has all of these blocks. Every other kid is sitting there bored, has nothing to do. One kid's in the corner with a tremendous amount of blocks, and the teacher's not there because they have the teacher's aide, and she's grading papers. She's not paying attention. And this one kid has all these blocks, and he's building these spires and houses, you know, and all the, he's having a great time, and all these kids are sitting bored. And then I look in the window and I see this going on, and I say, well let me not jump. Let me see this.
You're breaking up, Michael, a little bit.
I'm sorry, I'm breaking up.
Yeah.
But if I see the teacher walk in and she says, okay, what's going on here? And the kid says, well, you know, I told the, you know, and the, one of the other kids says, well, he told us there was a boogeyman outside, and if he was going to attack us, well, we had to give him, you know, all our blocks, or else, you know, or else the boogeyman was going to get us. And we gave him all our blocks to protect us. And he did several other things, and he ended up with all the blocks. So if the teacher walks in, she's mature, rational. That's why she works at the school. And you see her walk into the classroom, and she says, what's going on? And she redistributes all the blocks to every other kid. Now every kid has the blocks, and there's order in the classroom. Okay? She's gone from disorder to order. Now that's rationality. Okay? If there wasn't a rational element that came into that, I'd remove my kid from the school. Now why do we get into society and we can't be rational anymore?
Okay. But at the same time, is it all irrationality or is it a lot of it?
It seems
there's no rationality at all to be seen by you?
Well, I've come up with a completely rational statement. And and this is the statement.
That's the first irrationality that you've expressed this afternoon. That
okay,
you have
because
a perfectly rational statement.
I think there's ubiquitous irrationality. It has to be. So this is the rational statement, Eutrice. There is only what is happening. There is only what has happened in the past that actually happened, and there is what is happening now. And what is happening now is a result of the past. To me, that is a purely rational statement.
Okay.
Does anybody accept that statement?
We'll see. We shall see.
Okay.
So what got you in this existential mode today?
Well, you know, I hear on every show, around me, I read the newspaper, and everything seems like there's no rationality. And I have
I called it primitive thinking.
I think that there's a complete, but, you know, people think that they're rational.
Of course,
they have reasons, you know, for everything they do. But it's totally irrational, and we allow this irrationality because we accept their explanations.
Well, I do agree with you there. That's for sure. But let's see how people react to it. 888-874-4888. It is Free Your Mind Friday right here on PRN.FM. Let's hear what's going on in your head. What do you think? What do you think, period? You know, just what do you think? What are you thinking today? What should we draw our attention to? That's a very important question, and this is your space to do it. 888-874-4888. Are you there, Michael? Oh, he's gone. Okay. You know, the more I was going to tack on to something that Michael was saying, the more you see the craziness that becomes normal, you know, that look at Congress, what we heard yesterday, this business of wholesale looting, and yet this country has the nerve to point fingers at other countries and talk about Ukraine being a kleptocracy. You know, Ukraine is nothing compared to the kleptocracy we have here. I mean, if only we could have the Ukrainian version, it would be a step, you know, toward moderation. But here we have just incredible, untamed greed, and they're no longer hiding it. It's in your face. It's, what are you going to do about it? Yes, it's mine. Yes, I stole it. I'm kind of sorry, but mostly because I got caught. That's essentially the attitude. So let's see. Well, from Andrew Celsius on leadstories@gmail.com, he says, I've started this course and it is exceptional, mind-blowing and humbling. He's talking about a behavioral kind of course. Phoenix, Craig, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
Utrice, nice to talk to you again.
Thank you.
You know, I keep hearing about primitive thinking. Mm-hmm. I know that you like to talk about that. And I was interested in what you thought was the opposite of that.
Well, I think reasoning. You reason.
Okay.
Primitive thinking is knee-jerk and kind of instinctual. You know, you're just not thinking about anything beyond a two-dimensional issue. And sometimes not even two dimensions. You just take the situation for whatever it is.
We have such primitive thinking. You know, Utrice, I was thinking that, and you know, you answered the way I thought you would, and it's good to me, because I think the answer to primitive thinking, the opposite, is understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I just wanted to say that, and I'm so glad that when you talked about reasoning, that is much in line with understanding.
Yes, it is. I think so.
Yeah.
You know, we are taught, at least when you look at how policy is made and what people do in order to make policy. Let's take Obamacare. There is absolutely no reason that this thing should be foisted on the public. It is so wrong on so many levels. But it is primitive thinking, because the point is, as long as the insurance industry is satisfied, we don't care who gets hurt. We don't care what transpires to the people who can't afford it. We'll just lie to them and we keep throwing money at it until eventually all the kinks will work out. That is actually the attitude. You know, if it doesn't work now, in fact, one of Obama's supporters was saying, you know, we will tinker with it by about 2017. It ought to work. 2017.
Well, you know, I remember a long time ago, lawsuits and things like that. I would talk to my friends and they'd say, well, yeah, my insurance company is suing some other insurance company. It just seems like the whole thing is rigged.
It's just, it's awful. But we see it in policy all the time. You know, what is going on with these folks in Washington and in the state legislatures and even in agencies that control our everyday lives? There is no attempt at all to just formulate humane policies. It's not about what political points you make. It's really about, is this good for people?
Yeah.
Is this going to help the situation any? That's the last thing on their agenda.
It goes back. You know, I think we could all learn by practicing a little bit more understanding and not going for the bottom line.
That's sure. We could use quite a bit of that kind of thinking around here. Thanks, Greg, for calling. Thank you. 888-874-4888. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. From Brooklyn, Eric wants to free his mind. Eric, you're on the air.
Hey, Therese, how are you?
Okay, how are you doing?
I'm good.
What's on your mind today?
Well, a lot of things, but I'll go with the Obamacare situation.
Okay.
You know, I had talked about it before about the you know, the insanity of it. And I think it's a deliberate, you know, it's a deliberate legislation, and it's another one of these things where, yes, I think that the rest of the people who are supporting it, not the orchestrators, but the people, the regular population who's supporting it, I think it is primitive thinking, and I think that they're so weakened and so demoralized by their lot in life, their conditions that, you know, I think psychologically they just wanted something to cheer for. You know, they just needed something to celebrate, and, you know, it's a blind celebration for something that's, you know, inevitably gonna destroy them, because... You know, from the beginning, you wonder, like, how is it possible that I'm being helped by being forced to pay more into a system which I'm paying the most, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the people who have it, the people who have stolen it, are allowed to get away with it, and we're forced to pay more and more for, you know, less and less resources. And it doesn't make any sense. So Obamacare, from the beginning to me, didn't make any sense, you know. And
well, we talked about that on this program. We showed you how it didn't make any sense.
Exactly.
It didn't conform to anything, any rules of any sort.
Exactly. But this is not, it's not something where they made a mistake and, you know, it's something that they're going to figure out later. No, this is by design. And the people who are doing this have done this all over the world. You know, they've done this all. It's just another way of saying that, you know, they don't care about the people. It doesn't matter what happens to you. So the idea that you will go and sign yourself up for something that is, you know, like a self-destructive thing is amazing, because it's not about care. You know,
no,
it has nothing to do. It's about getting more of what you have. So the way I thought about it is that the people all the way on the top, they don't care about your Obamacare, because they buy what the hell they want. The people on their knees aren't getting adequate care, but they get something to maintain them. It's the people in the middle, the people who are above water, that are being forced to sink with this Obamacare, you know, because now you're going to be dependent. And you're dependent on a government who could care less about you. So basically, figure it out. That's what Obama is saying. And that's what the rest of these legislators are saying. So the idea that the Democrats and the Republicans are arguing, no, it's a show. You know, it's a show. Because if there was an argument, maybe they would try to lock up some of the bankers in jail. You know, that's the way. Maybe they wouldn't allow Republicans and Democrats together, won't allow you to be thrown out of your house and be homeless. You know?
Well, the thing is, the electorate, the people, I can't wait for the people to just reject both the Democrats and the Republicans, because neither of these parties has an answer that is worth considering. Neither of these parties is interested in really advancing and dealing with humane policymaking. They're scoring points. They're playing, you know, there's just them, Washington, and that little orbit of theirs is, you know, it entitles them to put the hand in the till and spend taxpayer money on whatever it is they want. They live in a different world altogether. And every now and then they may have contact with it, you know, like when election time comes around and they show up to tell you, please vote for me. But nothing, we haven't seen evidence yet in policymaking where the people who are making these policies are capable or even willing to literally appreciate the complexity of a problem and work on it to the advantage of all. This is not one of those all of us should share type of societies. This is not what it is at all. They're making points, busy making points. Thanks, Eric, for calling.
Good to hear from you today.
Sure. Did you say something?
Yeah, I wanted to make one more point.
But quick.
Okay. Just on the you know, the IRP 6.
Yes.
You know, I wanted to make a point about them. To me, it's not a popular view. You know, I understand that. But to me, I think it's really disingenuous the way they tell the story. Or not only the way they tell the story, but Clara asked one of them, the two of them that you had, she asked them, you know, them a good question. You know, what would you do differently? And from the answer they gave, they wouldn't do much differently. They would still market, you know, this idea that you're in the intelligence, you know, situation. One of your members are. You've been in the military. You've been in the society. And you have no idea about what happens to people, to black people, especially people of color. You know, you were naive about that. At what age? You know, like you say, what rock have you been under? But anyway, you know, I can say more about it, but I know there are other people, so I let it go.
Thank you so much, Eric, for your call. Right. James from Manhattan, welcome. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. You're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
I don't know where to begin. I just don't know where to begin, but I would have to say that...
Pick your most salient point.
I believe that we are all debt servants under a commerce regime that is in the guise of the United States of America. And I'll start with that first. And we are all paper chasing federal debt notes that are promissory notes to pay. And due to the 1913 Federal Reserve Act, among other dates and historical dates in history, we are forced to compete against each other to acquire, to attain, to earn these federal debt notes, aka money. And this is the reason why we have our problems in the congressional office, the legislation office, the bills never passed that benefit people, the bankers get away with murder, because all two of them, the politicians, the state, the government, the Supreme Court, the United States Congress, and the bankers, especially the bankers and the financiers, and the merchant class, are protected by the Bar Association, which is the British accredited regency.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is why we have problems.
It was so profound, I have nothing to say.
Well, I can continue if you wish.
Go right ahead.
So let me ask you,
based on what you said, based on your premise then, what is the alternative?
Oh, it's very easy, and in some, I don't know why people haven't solved it, is to proclaim yourself as a flesh and blood human being on paper, declare it in writing, meet with people of like minds, go seek out people who think the same way, and go to AIB Radio, Rod Class, to start off with. There's many other tenets, T-E-N-E-T, tenets. Not a tenant in an apartment building, but a tenant of someone who is someone of noted foundry or foundation of logic, education, reasoning. You have one right now, yourself, Gary Knoll, Hightower in the South, Ralph Nader. You have a few, Rod, R-O-D, Class, like in the classroom, C-L-A-S-S. YouTube him, go to AIB Radio, go to Talk Shoe Radio. He has a 3,000, maybe 4,000 following with a perhaps 2,000 email list currently now. I believe we need to support him and people of him. There's Winston Shrout. There's a man named Mr. Letts. There's others out there.
What will we learn? I'm presuming that you have yourself been exposed to this, whatever it is, but what have you learned as
you
a result of exposure to this?
There's just a lot you will learn. You learn there is a remedy out of this situation and a solution out of it. And that is to educate yourself on the history of congressional law and the history of our legal system, the history of banking and how banking has infiltrated this legal system and our government, the history of the Bar Association, where they are not lawyers but attorneys of the British Academy Regency, which is a foreign entity all itself, which is running ruckshot and has a lion's share in our court systems. That's why when you pay for an attorney or a lawyer, and you pay $5,000 for a lawyer, $2,000 for a lawyer, or sometimes even up to $20,000 for a lawyer to get some remedy, he doesn't really do much because his interest is to take you into that courtroom, milk you dry, have backroom deals or negotiated deals with the opposing party, and no one's happy. So you will learn these things.
Well, thank you, James, for offering that for our consideration today. Thank you so much. 888-874-4888. You know, I love these sessions where people just put their ideas out there for inspection. You get to appreciate how many people are traveling all these different paths, looking essentially for the same thing. We're all looking for some modicum of truth, you know, because we know we've been lied to. And it is a really hard thing to stomach. It really is. And, you know, to some degree, you can see how citizens are acting out the anger at being betrayed. I believe that Americans are very, very angry today, in a more palpable way than they were, let's say, 10 or 20 years ago. People feel oppressed by the government, and these folks are just not getting it. The more they should make an effort to say, look, we're all in the soup together, let's figure the problems out. The more they do that, the better it would feel. But right now, people are not feeling good about the American government. They're not feeling good about the apparatus of government. They're not feeling good about their diminished role as citizens in this republic. They're not feeling good about the so-called ideals, which have become embarrassingly contradictory. You know, you say one thing out of one side of your mouth, and then you do something completely different. And more, this psychological need to punish people, you know, punish the poor because they have no ambition. They lack fortitude. They just are useless in any event. And we would be so much better off without poor people, because after all, poor people cause poverty. That's the thinking. That's the complexity that which the policymakers think. You know, that's how they see it. Poor people cause poverty. But when you look at it, and you talk to people, you know, everybody I talk to, I can tell the dramatic shift that has occurred. For just a couple of years, in the last 5-6 years, where people, my friends and people in my circle, joking a heck of a lot, you get the sense that there is a burden on everyone now. You know, we're worrying about our future in ways that we didn't worry before. We're very angry about what's going on. We feel cheated. We feel betrayed. And we also feel hopeless, and I guess that's what the anger comes from. And you see this stuff working itself out in the most bizarre ways, you know, children killing their parents, parents killing their children. It's awful. And it really, at the root of it, I venture to say that it has to do with this feeling of being a tourist in your own existence. You know what I mean? You're not firmly anchored. There's no sense of safety anymore. And you get that across the board. People across the board are feeling very alienated from this government. And I'll talk on Monday. I really want to do a piece about understanding the Obama, the impact of President Obama and that kind of thinking that has become pervasive in, you know, the legislative bodies across the country. It is so heartless, and pointless, the way they're going about things, and nobody is interested in being told that they're wrong. You know? Look at how much money has been spent on this flawed concept called Obamacare. And they will throw several millions and millions more, hundreds of millions of dollars will be spent, and it will be as riddled with holes as it is today. It is bad, bad law. But nobody has the guts to just throw it out. Nobody had the guts to say, we can't do this until we think about this thing really carefully. Of course everybody wants to have medical care. That's not the point. But look at what you're doing to achieve it. And we, you know, this ends justifies the means. You don't care what people have to do to just pay the premium and shut up. You don't even go see the doctor. Just pay the premiums. That's all they're interested in. It's a different kind of attitude. And, you know, the entrepreneurial president, you know, the presidency and public office as a business, that concept has become, you know, democratized. Everybody's thinking exactly the same way. The civil rights leaders, as we're called, they're thinking the same way. Look, I marched across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. It better pay off for me now. I'm a businessman. You know, people who saw themselves as, well, I was with Martin Luther King when he got shot. I need to be paid now. I put in my time. And there's no sense of shame. There's no sense of obligation to continue. And you say to yourself, look at what people like Fannie Lou Hamer did, and with such incredible sacrifice. Or I continue to say today, one of the major things that we need to do, the fact that Alton Maddox is not practicing law is an affront to any semblance of fairness. But I think these things ought to be taken up, and people should say, no, we are going to limit the ability of the government, the organized state, to just do these kinds of things to people. And that was my point for the IRP6. In the end, we have to make a choice. I'll tell you a lead story. I was in a car, a passenger, with a couple of other people. We were on our way to somewhere. I can't remember where. But this was in New York, and we came to a red light. And at the stop sign, that was the days when, you know, a lot of panhandlers would come up and ask for money. And one did. And the driver of the car had some loose change in the cup holder. And he just grabbed a chunk of change and stuck it in the guy's hand. But in doing so, proceeded with this pontification. Don't spend this money on booze. Don't go buy cigarettes. Go and get something to eat. You know, all these instructions, because he was handing him a few cents. I got so mad. I was in the back seat, and I opened my purse. I grabbed a couple of singles that I had, and I said, here, take this. And he says, oh, I gave him some change already. I said, no, you know. He shouldn't take. I said, give him back his money. And the panhandler looked and surprise. I said, give him back the money. He can't afford to give you anything. He can't afford it. So give him back that, and you take this. And that started one heck of a discussion, because my point was, you either want to help or you don't. You either recognize a need, and you either are prepared to be compassionate or you're not. Just because you're putting a couple of pennies in somebody's hand doesn't give you the right to lecture them. I don't care what he wants to do with the money. I don't care whether he wants to go buy food or decides after all he will forego the food and buy cigarettes. It doesn't matter to me. The thing is, you've made a decision to help, or you're responding on that human level, and that's all that's required. No pre-qualification, none of that is important. In the situation with Dennis Rodman, that was my point. I don't know Dennis Rodman, but it doesn't matter, and it shouldn't matter to anybody that he should be this or he should be that before he qualifies for your help. No. If you're political people, you understand what the issue is. The issue is not the choice they made. The issue is the choice that you want to make. Are you going to step up against a system oppressing this person in the scheme of things, which is more evil? The fact that they made a particular choice you don't approve of, or you clearly see who is making the greater error here, a system that is hell-bent on destroying these innocent people. So you stand up against the system and with them. That's the only decision. If you're not prepared to do that, then don't bother to help. Same thing. If a couple of pennies comes with a lecture, you can't afford to help a person. You're not emotionally ready to help anybody. Nobody should accept anything from you, no matter how badly they need it, because that you're not ready. And that's the point I think we ought to grow into, this notion that we're not just human beings. We're called to respond at a different level. And we're called to understand in a given situation when you have to make a choice, the choice you should want to make is the choice of the adversary against an oppressive system. Never mind the other stuff. People are imperfect. Deal with it. You know, that's them. No problem. Don't even let it enter your consciousness, because you're not there to defend their character. You're there to fight against oppression. See? And that's how I look at it all the time. Even some of my friends would say, well, you know, you don't think that such and such is a bad thing for them to do, and how would it look like if you side with the person? But I'm not siding with the person in that sense. I am siding against the forces that are also against the person. And we could sort out the details later. You know, later we could take somebody to the side and say, you know, you messed up, right? Okay, sorry. James, you have something that you wish to say. I'm sorry. I just saw the note.
On the air, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I think your opinion and insight is very thoughtful, very clear and concise. I just needed to say that first. My reference to the cabal, the collaboration of the bankers and the politicians, and this government being protected by the lawyers and the bar association. This is the reason why you can't get any remedy. But what I wanted to talk about is how we have this this somehow. A global warming and climate change is somehow like the topic of the day, and that these scientists who've known about this for 20 years, actually longer than that, if you listen to Carl Sagan, God rest his soul, Carl Sagan, he was talking about this 25 years ago, and no one really credited him for that.
Look, the first nations of this land were all about ecology and environmentalism. They lived in harmony with nature.
Correct.
Long before Carl Sagan was even preparing to come to this earth,
yes,
we had
that is true.
Civilizations built on reverence for the earth, so much so that the earth was Father and Mother God. The earth
right.
was a deity, and they treated it with reverence. You know, we need to remember that this concept, a lot of these concepts that are being posed as new things, my gosh, thousands and thousands and thousands of years, this has been the consciousness of people.
This is correct. But what I'm referring to is you can't walk into the door. You could walk into the door of a conference room of leading scientists or leading weather and weather forums and tell them what you just said. It is true, but the academia and the so-called scholars and people, professors, knew about this long ago. And you are right that it's It predates modern science about this. The respect for the environment, the weather, and for the land and the soil that man came from. What I'm saying is this bizarre campaign for denial. It's a bizarre political marketing conscious campaign of denying the disasters that. These corporations have done in the motivation for profit of
absolutely,
and they do it in a very very slick, very cunning, very highly advertised and marketing engine, and with their lobbyists pushing various government officials, not just the United States. Worldwide, you have the fracking going on in the tar sands. You have polar bears who can't find any type of habitat in the Arctic and in the North Pole. It's disastrous there. But they do this for the profit. These multinational corporations, BP, which was in the paper today, New York Times, was allowed to have. To go back into the Gulf of Mexico to compete for federal contracts and benefits. That's the highest form of insult and hypocrisy. They 4 years ago, they should have been thrown in jail or under a jail, the executives, Halliburton, BP, the contractors. But no, they paid billions of dollars to their lawyers. Here you go again, their lawyers, and billions of dollars in payment of fines to this United States, so-called United States government, to go back into the Gulf of Mexico.
Sure.
And this is terrible.
That happens all the time in corporate life. If you have enough money, you could do just about anything. No, look at Bank of America. Look at these banks that have done. They even admitted they laundered drug money. They've manipulated the LIBOR rates. They have
the LIBOR rates and the drug money. And you know the drug money money and the drug cartels. I mean, you look at the movie Scarface, and you saw how Scarface, they had vans of laundry bags of money. Laundry bags of money funneling into the corporate banks. That's going on in every country. I know it for sure. It's going on in all of most of European countries. Of course, the United States.
It's going on in the Vatican, for crying out loud.
And the Vatican.
But we have to end it though. We are at the end of the hour.
Right. We'll talk more. It's the first time I ever bother calling you.
I really appreciate the fact that you made the effort. Thanks and welcome. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. I hope you freed your mind. I really like the idea of freeing your mind because you never know what's coming in for us to consider. You know, all these various thoughts about various things keeps the brain working, so I want to thank you for that. Keep it here, right here, because your wake-up call with Richard Martin is next. Drop me a note at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. I hope you freed your mind and your reward will be a nice and peaceful weekend. Your brain will thank you for decompressing today. So we'll see each other on Monday and pass the word about this station, PRN.FM, and your favorite program, ours, right here. Bye-bye.